views and opinions expressed on the following podcast are those of the persons appearing on the program and not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. Welcome to another edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm your cordial and ADHD host. Let me check. Yep, that's me, Russ LeBlanc, saying welcome, welcome. Yes, indeed, I said welcome. At least I think I did. This darn memory of mine, it doesn't kick in when I want it to. Club ADHD, the podcast, what you're listening to right here, as well as the Facebook page and the Twitter account, brought to you by the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADDAC, that's C-A-D-D-A-C. Put that in your web browser at a.ca and you'll get to their website full of information that I know you can benefit from. Plus, there's some timely information in regards to the CADDAC Annual Conference, which will happen next month. If you're listening right now in September, I'm talking in the next month, which, let me get my calendar out, is December. No, dollar store calendar. Ugh. October, yeah. For full details, go to cadac.ca, that's cadac.ca. The conferences are always informative. I've been to most of them over the past 10 years, and it's a great opportunity for us not only to learn from the people who are giving the presentations or hosting the seminars, but we can learn from each other because just about everyone there has something in common. We're all affected by ADHD. And I often hear this from attendees. They say it's really comfortable. It's a comfortable setting because we don't have to pretend. Everyone knows what we're experiencing. So we don't have to put on that face. So I highly recommend that you check this out no matter where you are in Canada or even in the world. Hey, making an excursion. Yeah. Visit the CADDAC website for full details. You will not be disappointed. The only time you'll be disappointed is if you don't attend. Sometimes we can't attend everything, right? That was my little sales pitch there. Hey, I mentioned the Twitter account and the Facebook page. If you want to go to a place with links to those things, that's simple. Go to clubadhd.ca and hit the links. And now, I'm going to ask you, as I do every time we get together, how are you these days? If the answer is, yes, I'm fine. I'm terrific. Congratulations. I'm happy for you. And if you're saying, don't ask. Well, I'm going to applaud that anyway. Not because I'm happy that you're not feeling up to snuff, whatever that means. If you're not feeling, you know, pleased about things. I'm not celebrating that. I'm celebrating the fact that at least you're doing something. You're listening to the podcast. And maybe by listening to this podcast, it could get you out of the funk that you're in. And when I say funk, I'm not talking about, yeah, the stuff we used to groove to back in the 70s. No. I'm talking about that blah feeling. You're doing something. And that's to be noted as a good thing that you're doing for yourself. At least I hope you think it's that way. That's what I'm trying to do here on the podcast. And that's what we all do here on Club ADHD. Whether it's me talking to you or interviewing a guest on the podcast, or maybe other people who are Club ADHD members who are presenting some topics on the Facebook page or commenting on some topics or some situations that maybe somebody is experiencing, and they're telling us all about it. Lots of great information on the Facebook page from other Club ADHDers. Or the Twitter account, same deal. I learn something from those things just about every day. And sometimes I learn strategies that my ADHD comes up with that makes perfect sense. You know, you have those light bulb ideas. And a lot of the time, those light bulb switches are turned on by just experiencing what's going on the Facebook page or on the Twitter account or even talking to you on the podcast or our guests. So it's a good thing. This Club ADHD thing is starting to catch on, and I'm happy. It's for us, the people, the adults with ADHD, learning from each other in most cases. And I want to tell you about what's going on in my world. You know, I mentioned the loss of a few loved ones over this past summer, and you know, it's tough to deal with that loss, but we have to, you know, carry on as best we can. And sometimes we have to put things off just to mourn. And you know, I won't stop mourning for, well, I'll never forget these people. One, my mother who lived with us, and my nephew. But yeah, we're told to carry on, and sometimes it's not easy, and sometimes things fall between the cracks, especially if you have ADHD. And that's what happened to me. That's why I'm playing catch up with the podcast. And we're almost caught up. But there were a few incidents recently for me where I was putting off little things that could be done easily, but I thought, well, I'll do it tomorrow. We all know that, you know, we people with ADHD. The thing is, if we say that for everything, those little things become big things, you know, mashed together, and we run out of time. Do you run out of time? Do you get so close to the deadline you can smell it and it's still not done? Yeah. Well, I had a moment of clarity when it came to one little thing I shouldn't be putting off, because it wasn't going to take a heck of a lot of time. It was just so much easier to say, I'll do it tomorrow. However, I could not shut off my brain to thinking that, oh, I've got to do this thing, which to me is not exactly the most pleasurable thing to be going on in my brain. So I weighed the pluses and the minuses. I thought, all right, this isn't pleasing. Matter of fact, for some people, it could trigger something bigger, like clinical depression, if you happen to suffer from that. And yep, I've got my hand up when it comes to, you know, having that little prize package added to my ADHD. But no, it didn't trigger that. It was just a nagging bit of, oh, you know, just a cloud. So in my moment of clarity, I thought, okay, I'm feeling this way about this cloud. How do I avoid or stop this cloud or bring out some sunshine? Well, here's the logical thing. Just do the thing I'm putting off. And then another moment of clarity. Do I feel better? Or what's worse, I should say? Experiencing that cloud by putting it off till tomorrow, that small thing that wouldn't take a lot of time, or taking some time right now to do that task. And it was an easy scenario to solve. Do it, because how am I going to feel after it's done? I'm going to feel a lot better. That cloud will dissipate. It'll vanish. So that's what I've done. That's what I did. And I do feel better. And sometimes we get so caught up in our clouds that we start living life in a fog and we just don't do the practical thing. So if you learn anything from this, learn from what I just experienced. Sometimes it's easier said than done, I know, but we all get clarity sometimes, right? We're not totally in the fog all the time. So do yourself a favor. Do those things, especially the little things that add up to be big things. You know, we don't deserve to be feeling that way. Just get them done and feel better about it. There, I said it. That's my little, not a rant, but my cheerleader cheer for today. Where's my pom-poms? Yes. Hey, we've got a good interview coming up. I know I say that during every podcast, but it's true. And it kind of ties into our feelings. Because this person was on the podcast, I thought a year ago, but time flies. 2 years ago, he was on talking about this topic. I wanted to find out how he's doing these days. And what are we going to talk about? Well, stay tuned to find out. That's a little teaser, but you don't have to wait long because I'm going to introduce right now the interview portion of that thing we call Club ADHD, the podcast. Up next on the podcast, we speak to someone who has a vast communications background. He's a broadcaster in the traditional sense, who morphed into an internet broadcaster by creating a successful internet-based 24/7 radio station. It's called BlastTheRadio.com, or BTR for short. He's a creator of a website for the broadcast radio industry that's followed by many. He's also become an advocate, a very vocal advocate. an advocate who isn't afraid to explain how he's connected with the very thing he advocates for. And that thing is something many of us with ADHD know all about. What is that something? Depression. Clinical depression. The full meal deal. His name is John Mielke, and he's no stranger to Club ADHD, the podcast, because I interviewed him back then about his depression. Now, over those 2 years, John has kicked it up a notch. He's really kicked it up a notch when it comes to depression and mental health awareness. So much so that I thought it'd be a good idea to check in with him so he can tell us about some of the things he's learned when it comes to dealing with his depression. So we, those of us with ADHD and depression, might be able to pick up a few pointers. Now, if you don't have depression mixed in with your ADHD, please give the interview a listen, because there's a very good chance you know someone with that, what I call, double whammy. By the way, as the interview progressed, I noticed something. Something I'm sure many of us can identify with. Hey, was it just my imagination? Or was I on track? You can decide. As I chat with John Mielke, and the topic is depression. I started the interview off by asking John, so how are you feeling these days?
I can honestly tell you that right now I am absolutely the best I have been in well over a decade.
Really? Now,
yeah.
How long has that been going on?
This has been a really good year for me. Something just sort of clicked, you know, not long after Christmas. And I winter has always been, you know, I'm sure you've heard about seasonal affective disorder just as often as I have. And it's something I've certainly struggled with. I made it through this winter relatively unscathed. And just that momentum of knowing that I did it. And this is a brutal winter in Ottawa. It was awful. And it started early and it ended late. But that I pushed through it was, it spoke to all the work that I've done, finally adding up to, you know, getting me back to a place where I can manage this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I hope, I pray.
Now, do you find when things are going well, and a lot of people say this, and for me, it's a mixed bag with depression, and I have it too, when things are going well, you don't get depressed. Now, there are some people who do. Would you describe yourself? Is that right?
No, I absolutely, positively, things can be going incredibly well, and depression will just out of nowhere, you know, hit me like I'm a tackling dummy on a football field, just blindside me and completely take me down. Yep. And maybe it's the experience and the years that I've lived with this thing and had to go through that time and time again that, you know, prepares me for it. You know, the next time this happens, what am I going to do? What's my plan of action? And you can plan for that all you want.
Yeah.
You still never see it coming. And it always has this way of creeping up on you that I wasn't expecting that. Okay. It just hasn't been around me lately, not to the degree that it was for a lot of years.
Now, when it does it come like a person with a migraine can feel it coming? Can you feel it coming?
Yes.
What do you do?
The biggest thing that I have found that is working for me is when I feel that coming, I need to become incredibly active. If that means moving things off my calendar, if that means canceling, you know, a lunch with someone, you know, whatever it is, making as much time for me and moving and forcing myself and getting on it early. Okay, I feel this coming. And you describe it as a migraine. I describe it, it's like a pressure headache. There's this descending pressure feeling in my head, and I know that that's just my brain saying, I am going to start kicking your body to the curb now, and you're going to be laying face down in your bed for a month. And it comes out of nowhere, and it's this sudden onset, and I feel it, and I just, okay, I need to start walking, I need to start moving, I need to start, you know, just not being in the same place at the same time now. I need to change everything I'm doing for a little while just to throw this thing off.
How long did it take for you to figure it out?
Oh, a good 10, 15 years.
Yeah. It's a struggle, isn't it?
God. And I know, and I'm not stupid enough to allow myself to go, okay, I got this now. I know that there's going to come a time where I think I've got this figured out, and it's going to throw me a curveball that I never expected, and I won't know how to, you know,
yeah,
off at the pass. It will always find its way back, and the trick for me is to, you know, keep doing the therapy, keep doing the meds, keep learning about this, so that I've constantly got tools in my toolkit that I can go to and say, okay, that's not working. What about this?
Now, I know some of our listeners, and I've been there, having ADHD, we tend to focus on things, and we just focus and focus, and sometimes we focus on the fact that, oh, we have depression with this, oh, we have depression, we have depression. I don't think that's a very good thing to keep telling yourself that. Do you?
No, but I do not live with ADHD, but I can tell you this. Depression has its own voice that is very strong in that regard. You know, it says that to you all the time. Here I am. I got you. Ha ha. You're mine. Come with me. Ha ha. And it festers and it compounds itself. And a lot of the struggle is finding the mute button for that.
Yeah. I mean, with ADHD, it's like a course. You've got the ADHD yelling at you, and you've got the depression. And yeah, how do you manage it? How do you say, okay, shut up?
So that's depression on reverb, basically.
Yeah.
No, that can't be fun.
No. But how do you get it to, how do you get that inner voice and it's telling you, you know, it's yeah, I'm here. What you're saying is that you get up and you do things on your own. That's another fight too. Some people want to just ride it out and lie down and hope for the best and hunker down and wait for the tsunami to, you know, dissipate. But you go the other way, right?
But I have to force myself to go the other way.
Yeah, in the perfect world.
The face down in the bed thing is what it wants you to do. And for a long time, I have done just that. And look, even in the thick of it, you know, if this thing is with me for, you know, a week or so, not every day is going to be a win. Not every minute is going to be a win. But, you know, I need to be better. Like if I'm sitting here like today, you know, you're the third podcast that I'm on today. So I did my radio show. I was on a podcast before you. I've got a podcast after you. So I know that today is a day where I'm going to be sitting for most of my day. Mm-hmm. I have scheduled, just because I know if I allow myself to sit here all day, that's going to be an invitation to depression to come on in.
Oh,
have a
okay.
seat. Hang out a while. So as soon as I'm done my podcasts, my activity this evening is I'm getting on my bike and I'm going for a bike ride, and I'm not going to, you know, allow myself to drink pop today or have sugary things today. I'm going to keep it absolutely healthy and give myself the best chance of having, you know, a good adrenaline rush going through me. But on the days that, you know, it's kind of backwards like that, where it just sort of snuck up on me and knocked me onto the couch for a while, it's a matter of articulating to those around me that, you know, I don't really want to be sitting here all day, so please don't let me. Find things for us to do. Find a chore for me. Don't stop hounding me to do it. And that's, you know, that's learned behavior. My poor wife has to learn how to do that, because her inclination is just to say, okay, he's having, you know, one of those days. I'm best just to leave him alone. And my reactions and everything that I verbalize will probably, you know, indicate to her that just leave me alone today, babe. Just, you know, no, I just don't want to. But in moments of clarity, when I'm up, you know, the key has been to say to her, when that happens, find things for me to do. Mm-hmm. Make sure, you know, if there's five things on the list, make sure I get three of them done at least. Make it a win for me.
Well, that's good that you have a partner who understands it.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, and she didn't for a long time, despite the fact, I mean, she's got a degree in psychology, too, which helps.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, even with the degree in psychology, there are still things that she sees that she's like, I never learned that from a textbook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's one thing to know how to make a cake, but, you know, once you're thrown in the kitchen, it's, yeah. We ADHDers know all about that. We know what we're supposed to do. We can't figure out why we can't do it.
Right. And so, I mean, you know, dealing with my depression really is a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be. But, you know, I've got good people, too, who, you know, recognize just through my words and my postings or if I get quiet, you know, on social media, they know that, you know, they sense that. Okay, I better reach out to John. I better check in. And I've got some people who are really, really good at, hey, man, do you need me right now? No, I'm cool. Okay, you've been awfully quiet. Yep, I got this is going on. Okay, you know, they got a good support system
That's
around
great.
Me, which really,
it,
yeah, no, yeah. I'm very lucky.
Do you find it easier to, you mentioned that you want to do something on your own, if you're in a crowd or you have to interact, do you think that you have to put on a mask in order to disguise the depression?
Crowds have been my biggest challenge of late because that's the anxiety, right? And as much self-confidence as I have, I can go into a radio studio, I can put the microphone on and say just about anything. Now I've got a video camera in the studio and I'm performing to the video camera, so I know I've got eyes on me, but there's still that thing. You know, for a lot of years in the later years of my conventional radio tenure, I was not able to do live on location stuff. I just could not handle somebody walking past a storefront and seeing me or a listener walking up and talking to me face to face or just the eyeballs on me. It just it consumed me. It made me sick, physically sick. And this year, I've decided that I need to push myself past that, and I have allowed myself. It helps that I've become very good friends with. This is an interesting story. I've become very good friends with a couple of drag queens.
Oh, okay.
My internet radio station has got a great sponsor in one of the local bingo halls, and they have done these drag bingo nights for
All
the
right.
longest time. And a couple of years ago, they invited us to take over the music and the lighting and partner with them in that regard. And so one of the drag queens is actually someone I had met at an event called Sexapalooza here in town. I was doing some emceeing on stage there. And she was the house MC.
Wait a minute. Are you sure you don't have ADHD with that impulsive side of you, huh?
I'll bring it up the next time I'm in therapy because that's okay. What I need is another thing to worry about.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Just pile it on. So it was funny. We kind of knew each other. But anyway, so it's Miss Imagine That is one of the drag queens. And her sidekick goes by Divalicious. And Divalicious and I have always had a sort of like a brother sister kind of, you know, relationship where it's that, you know, poke back and forth of, you know, kind of humor. And it's deprecating, but it's out of love always. And Divalicious, whose real name is Mark, has always said, because I've always joked about if I was a drag queen, you know, being the milkman in my radio world, I would be the Dairy Queen. Ha, 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 ha.
All right.
and he said, you know, don't joke. He says, because someday this has to happen.
You're coming out. I can feel it.
So... It was Mark's birthday, Divalicious's birthday back in April, and I was told that what he would really love is for the Dairy Queen to actually come to life.
Oh.
And I hummed and hawed, and I struggled with it. I really struggled with it, but I you know, to hold myself to account, I put it out there that I was going to do this. So now I've committed publicly to doing it, and there's just something about when I make that public commitment that I find a way to push myself through it. And yes, perhaps, you know, the fact that I was going to be incognito somewhat probably allowed me to hide behind a mask, but there was something incredibly liberating about that night. And I think, you know, my brain told me that, you know, I'm not a gay man and this is something that only gay men do. I have no business doing this, but any of my gay friends told me with a big smile on their face, in no uncertain terms, this is fantastic that you're going to
just
go for it. Have fun. Oh. There's no criteria that you have to be gay to do this. Go ahead. Why can't a straight guy do this? And I was met with such great response when I, you know, walked out there in a black and white wig, and a girlfriend of mine had done my makeup. What is it, by the way? What makes women lose their minds putting makeup on a man? They just go nuts. She loved it. And so I came trotting out. Now, I didn't do the, you know, I had leggings on, basically workout pants, and I found some high-heeled boots that, frankly, have got a better tread on them than some of my Kodiak boots do.
Oh.
You know, but just to make sure that I could actually, you know, survive walking around, you know. But it was a cute, silly little thing. Well, lo and behold, if I'm not getting requests now to do MC gigs as the Dairy Queen.
Really?
And here's the bitch of it all. She, my alter ego, the Dairy Queen, gets a higher fee than I do.
Now, wait a minute, Mark. I've got to tell my ADHD brain it's getting filled up with comments, and I don't know if I want to say it, so I'm not going to say anything about a banana split. I won't say. Wait a minute. Oh, this damn ADHD.
That's funny.
Brain.
Actually, my whole thing when I came into the room was I handed out dilly bars.
Oh, my goodness. Ba-dum, boom. Yeah, let's face it, Mark. You do have ADHD. You have ADHD.
I have a creative brain.
Same thing.
So I did that, and that allowed me to, to do an MC gig for a burlesque show as well, where I went beyond just, you know, sort of the guy in the booth emceeing the show to actually stepping out on stage in a red sequin jacket. Hello world, here I am. Face to face with the crowd and responding to the occasional heckler, or for lack of a better word. And I have found of late that like and I can't even explain why I'm in a good place, but things just seem to have clicked for me where I'm able to let stuff roll off my back now instead of letting it fester. And I really wish I had an explanation for it, because people ask me all the time, why can't I do this? What's your secret? I've worked at it and worked at it and worked at it. And I've had to trick my brain, and I've had to tell my brain, shut up. We're just going to do this. And the more of it that I do, you know, the more I've come to the realization that if I allow myself to become that character, I can actually be comfortable as that character. I don't need to be me, because me would be very uncomfortable.
So there isn't a risk of you being depressed while you're getting ready to go on stage? That would be something.
Thank God that's never happened, and let's touch wood that it doesn't. But
I'm sorry I brought it up. Now I put it in your brain.
But it's a valid question. I've certainly had days where I've been dealing with some depression, but there's something about being a performer.
Well, yeah.
That you just know you've got to, again, put on that mask.
That's right.
You've got to find a way to do it, even though it's hell. In the moment, it's not so bad. It's the before and the after.
Well, yeah, it's just like a comedian. You're a comedian. Yeah. You're on stage for an hour, and then you're at the motel usually for the next 23.
Comedians are some of the most depressed.
They are.
Sad, lonely people I've ever encountered. And the way that they are able to use that and leverage that into what they talk about on stage that makes you and I laugh is miraculous. It really is. But that's their outlet. So, yeah, for me, depression and anxiety will eat me as it will eat at me as I'm thinking, okay, tonight's not going to go well. This isn't going to happen. I'm not feeling this. And, you're trying to talk yourself out of it. Something happens, though, when you get up on that stage and you manage to, and you might walk out of there feeling, that's not my best. That really didn't go very well. But it's, what's the old saying from radio days, when we go in there you'd go in there with a cold and you felt like, oh, that was just a lousy show.
Yeah.
And then you listen back to the tape and it's like, you know what? that was actually one of my best shows. Why? Because you have to focus more to get past that obstacle.
Yeah, and as an aside, it's not a clinical study, but the majority of really good comedians have ADHD, which comes with the baggage of depression. And when I'm talking about depression and crowds, when I'm in that zone, that negative zone, sometimes I find it frustrating that when I'm not hiding it, that people will come up and say, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And to me, there's a fine line between support and pity.
Oh, there absolutely is.
And pity's no fun.
Yeah. No, pity's no fun, and I don't ever want anybody going, "I'm really sorry you have to live with that." In fact, that's kind of been one of the things that I've had to learn through this. Is I used to kept saying, you know, that I'm cursed by depression, or now it's just, you know, it's just I live with this. I have depression. It's just I have a cold. I have a broken arm.
Sure.
It's a factual thing. I don't want to use, I don't let myself use language like I'm cursed with this thing.
Well, that's what we say to people with ADHD. It's the same thing. It's part of you.
Yep.
You're not going to say, "Boy, that pinky is bent." You're going to straighten up. That's the way it is, man. You know, that's me. And sometimes when you're undiagnosed, normal is normal to you, but it's abnormal to somebody else.
Yeah, and I think you followed me, you know, long enough on Facebook and stuff. I think you've probably seen a difference in some of the language that I use when posting about my depression. And I always try and start it off with, "I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm not looking for an outpouring of you know, oh poor me, or this is not a pity party. I just need to put this somewhere, and I've chosen to put it here."
Well,
and as long as I preface it with that, and I had to learn, I had to do that because. A few months back, I want to say last fall, so about a year ago, I just put how I was feeling on Facebook because it was an outlet and it was convenient. And somebody, I still don't know who, and thank you to that person for the concern, but somebody was so concerned about what I had written that they called the police to do a wellness check on me. And by the way, in case people don't know, the police are very good at doing wellness checks, and it's an invaluable service, and I can't thank police officers enough for doing that. I had two officers at my door, much to my surprise, because I really wasn't feeling as bad as I thought I had expressed. But I appreciated the check-in. Thank you very much. But I learned I better be careful what I put out there and how I put it out there, because it can very easily be misinterpreted by somebody who wants to give me that pity or is afraid for me. So I need to be very careful with the language that I use. And I think we all need to learn that, because if we're just putting words out there because we need to have that outlet, remember to put them out there with some sort of preface that, "No, I am okay. This is just here to remind me of how I'm feeling right now."
Yeah. And the thing is, with the internet, it stays out there. So that's now you mentioned about you being on the internet and on Facebook. Before we went on air here, we were talking and I said, I thought it was a year that it's been since the last time. No, it's been 2 years next month that you've been on this podcast. Now,
that's
over
amazing.
That time, yeah, I followed you and you've really picked it up a notch when it comes to just talking about, one, your depression and talking about depression as a whole by creating awareness. So some of my listeners, a lot of the listeners know what's coming. I can feel it. It's a round of applause for John for all his efforts. But that's kind of cool that not only are you going through this, you are willing to let other people experience it, not so much depression, but just so they know what it's all about.
It's a realization that if I have to live with this thing, what's the purpose of it? And my immediate thought was, okay, I have a gift of being able to verbalize things and use terms and explain things to people in ways that others may not be able to. And depression and anxiety, as you know, a lot of people hear about it. And they see, I mean, before I was diagnosed, before I was you know, living with it. I really kind of dismissed it as, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a real thing. Oh no, it's a real thing. And so if I have this gift and if I have this platform of radio and internet and, you know, various websites that I run, the ability to MC and engage in, you know, with audiences, I'm going to talk about it, but I'm going to find ways to talk about it. And again, this is, you know, a great coach, you know, taught me a valuable lesson that when you are really, really feeling down, do something to lift somebody up.
Ah, good.
Because
good advice,
that will, that will pull you up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and a lot of it is, has been, you know, them pointing out to me that when you say things like this that you posted, it's interpreted by the world in a negative way. Try and, you know, try and keep those negative moments in-house. Try and keep them with that, you know, within that inner circle of yours. Speak positively, you know, when you're engaging the public. Speak openly but positively. Try and laugh at it. Try and, you know, find an angle to it that is uniquely yours. And I have to, but you know, I've been in broadcasting since I was a teenager, and I was always marveling at broadcasters who seemed to have a purpose. You know, they had adopted a certain cause, a certain charity that they were always willing to go out and work for. They were always willing to do a variety of appearances for a variety of things, but there's always that one special one that really touched them specifically, and you could tell that it was near and dear to them. Well, I never had that until depression and anxiety came along, until I had a suicide attempt, until I was in and out of the hospital for, you know, nervous breakdowns and you know, talking about, you know, killing myself again. And so I needed to find a way to make this my purpose, and talking about it and becoming, I guess, you know, poster child or whatever, but recognizing mostly, as I said, that I have a gift to be able to tell people about this thing in ways that they listen. That's a special and unique thing. And okay, I'm going to choose to do that, and I'm going to choose to be that beacon and be that spokesperson, even though I wasn't elected to be. But if I'm given that opportunity, I'm going to be the mayor of Depressionville, and I'm going to stand up for it, and I'm going to speak very glowingly of it. But I always try and find a comedic turn to it.
Well, the parallels with what you've just described goes hand in hand with Club ADHD in the way that I and we approach ADHD, because depression, as you know, is one of the baggage that comes along with the so-called disorder. But what I find challenging, either in ADHD or depression, is that it's so much easier to be able to coach someone else than it is to coach ourselves.
Yes. Amen. I hear that loud and clear. You're so right.
Right? It's just the nature of the being. And
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, really. And if only we could get a tape recorder within our tape. I'm dating myself here, but if only we can get a recorder within ourselves. Yeah, I've been around the block, John. I'll admit it.
But how do I record that onto an 8-track?
8-track. I'm not that sophisticated when it comes to technology. I'm still. But it's true. I mean, we don't listen to what we preach.
And it's interesting. The podcast I was on prior to this was more from the business side, and it's about being a CEO and being a leader. And one of the questions they asked is, you know, what makes you a great CEO? And my answer was, you know, the ability to listen, which is something I've had to train myself to do.
ADHD.
But you know, those of us in radio, I mean, we're very good at talking, and I'm sure you've seen it and experienced it in your own career. There are some in our industry who just cannot sit down with an artist or with a political candidate and do an interview because they can't listen. And for a long time, I had stopped listening. So whenever I get a coaching opportunity, and I relish coaching opportunities, I love working with young talent. That's always been a thing. I would love to find a job within an organization that allowed me to just coach. Because I love it so much, but I'm a better coach when I'm actually really listening to the lessons I'm trying to get across, even more so when I listen to what's coming back at me from the other side, especially, you know, when you're talking to younger people who aren't necessarily as jaded especially in our industry, you know, they're young and their eyes are wide open and they haven't been through this. And some of the, you know, some of the stuff you get back, to listen to that and to use that as encouragement. And, you know, it's very easy to brush it off and laugh at it as, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I choose to hear it as that's the truth. And that's the view of someone who's new and young at it. So when I get an opportunity to listen to someone asking questions about my experiences with depression and anxiety and suicide attempts and being in the hospital, I listen very carefully, and I tend to slow my conversation down when I'm talking about it too, because I want to make sure that I, in my mind, am hearing the words before they come out of my mouth. And maybe part of that is exactly what you described. I need to hear the lesson myself.
John, I know there are people who are listening right now who are thinking the same thing I'm listening or thinking, is that, get this man tested for ADHD. I kid you not. Honestly, everything you are saying, and a lot of people don't understand it because they don't know that, they think, ah, squirrel. And in the industry, in the entertainment industry, ADHD is rampant. And what you are describing, honestly, I'm not looking to add to your
I get it.
Sounds like, it's kind of like we ADHDers, you know, people who are gay say, oh, I have gaydar. I can tell a person who's gay.
When I love that expression.
ADHDers have the same radar for ADHD. And I kid you not, because before, and I'm not looking to get a convert here,
no,
folks.
And I'm not dismissing what you're saying at all. Let me take you back to grade six. I had a fabulous teacher in grade six named Madame Moise. And I'm currently writing my book right now, and she plays a big part in one of the early chapters. Because I'd gone through kindergarten, grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and grade 6, and I was always, and still am, a daydreamer. I would stare
at
that.
Oh, God, ADHD!
Listen, this is why I'm not dismissing it. And she actually, she had me attend the parent-teacher interview, which was odd. And she said to me, she said, John, I would love to see the house you would design for me. I wouldn't want you building it, but I would love to see that. She had me pegged back in grade 6.
John, ADHD. I'm telling you, a lot of people don't realize, who don't understand. They think ADHD or ADD, as they call it. You know, I just not focused, given Ritalin. Everything you are saying is from the ADHD handbook.
Well, I mean, that's entirely possible. I'm not going to dismiss it.
Now, don't. It's not a bad thing. Not a bad thing.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying for a second it is.
Richard Branson
has it, right?
And everything that you're saying too is that something came to mind when you were talking earlier about, you know, trying to accept it. Howie Mandel, who suffers from a variety of things, one of which is ADHD and some depression and OCD, he put it best. And I've mentioned this before, but I love this line. He's comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, he is.
Or he says he is. And that's how he can manage it as best he can.
He's a marvel to watch. I'm a huge Howie Mandel guy. We saw him in Las Vegas. Here's a fun story. My wife and I went to Las Vegas to see Howie Mandel, and she's like, the guy that puts the rubber glove over his nose and inflates it. I said, yeah. But he actually does stand-up comedy. She's like, okay. We ended up damn near front row. And I can do the Bobby voice that he does, you know, the little kid voice. I can do that bang on. And so I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have an opportunity to do dueling Bobbies with Howie Mandel. And he's doing his thing on stage, and he mentions he's from Toronto, Canada. There I am, front and center, applauding. He goes, no way, you're from Toronto? I said, well, no, I'm from Canada, though. He says, but I said I was from Toronto, and you clapped. You know, he's busting my balls on it. I said, well, yeah, but I was clapping for the candidate party. He goes, where are you from? I said, Ottawa. He goes, Ottawa's nowhere near Toronto. Of course, I'm going, you know, I'm looking at the map in my head, and I'm going, oh, Ottawa and Toronto are kind of close. He says, let me ask you a question. He says, if my car broke down on the Don Valley Parkway at 2:00 in the morning, could I call you? Would you come help me? And I fired back with, I came here for you, didn't I? So he wasn't coming near me for the rest of the night. He knew because he was uncomfortable. So, you know, was
well,
he
yeah, you kind of threw it. You set him up. It was a perfect setup because it's
but
true.
It was interesting to watch the professional. It is Howie Mandel, though.
Yeah.
Work the stage for the rest of the night where he didn't quite come back to me. And all I wanted to do was do the Bobby voice for him, and I didn't get a chance to do it. And it was really upsetting.
John, so, you have ADHD. Oh, man, everything you're saying. I mean, I'm not a clinical psychologist, and I'm not official, but I want to run you through this test. Anyway, but it's
for what for what I know of ADHD, and you certainly know more about it than I do because you've lived with it and you know you've been diagnosed with it, therefore you have
interviewed, I've been around it, all that stuff, much like your depression.
But I mean,
don't fight
maybe
the
I do. No, maybe I do. I'm not going to go look for a diagnosis. I just like to think of it that I have, you know, a hyper creative brain, and it just, you know, they all have intertwined elements, don't they? All of these mental health.
Some of it, but no, what you're telling, honestly,
matters.
I'm being totally serious here, is that, 99% of what you're saying is ADHD, and a lot of people don't realize it. They don't know about it, and that's the funny thing with ADHD. People will say, "Well, yeah, I lose my car keys all the time," or "Yeah, I'm creative. I figure out a way how to get in the house last month when I didn't have my keys," or whatever. But it's an ongoing thing, and depression is very common because usually the ADHD comes first. You get upset, that would be a big reason.
The ADHD would exhaust the brain, I would think. You're just thinking all the time and reacting all the time.
It's such a wide spectrum. The thing with ADHD, we can go to 100 miles an hour or we go to zero. We do it both. We have a hard time staying in between. You're either going full tilt or you're totally shut down. We have to fight to hit that 50 mark. And I call ADHD the Rodney Dangerfield of disorders because it gets no respect.
Gets no respect?
Yeah, it's true. Because even within the mental health world, there are psychiatrists who don't understand it at all. And then when you hear some things, sometimes you think, I think that person has ADHD too. But I'm just throwing it out there and we can talk afterwards. But as far as the depression angle, from what you're telling, I know a lot of us, myself included, can identify with what you're going through. I mean, it's not the same. I mean, there were moments in my life when I wanted to end it. And the funny thing is, and this is a true story, and I kind of figured maybe I'm just looking for help as opposed to ending it. I went to the hardware store, and I said, okay, how am I going to do this? And started looking at rope. I said, oh, yeah, this. No word of lie. I said, no. None of this is going to work. They all look too uncomfortable.
Right.
So I'm not going to, I want to be comfortable if I'm going. So I know that, sometimes.
I've had that conversation in my own head, by the way. I know exactly the conversation you're having. Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize it, is that do we really want to kill ourselves? Probably not, but we want help. But the frustrating thing to me.
We want out of the situation that we're in, and it's so painful. The brain, the easy thing is just, I want out. I got to flee. And because they don't give you any hope that you're going to be able to live a normal life.
Yeah.
And, you know, so your brain tricks you into thinking, okay, it's all or nothing.
But you know,
you said 100 or zero, right? So you in that moment were going, I'm going for the zero, the ultimate zero.
But you know, the frustrating thing is that when you find out about somebody who's killed themselves, and you have so many people coming up and saying, oh, if I've only known, only if you only reached out to me, and blah 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 blah, and I'm thinking, right, lip service. Do you feel that way when you hear that?
Yes and no. I think that expression or that sentiment comes from an honest place, that if somebody truly understood the pain that somebody else was going through, they would want to help them. The reality in life, though, is that we are all so busy doing so many things, and we all have our own piles of crap to deal with, that we're unable to really recognize the severity of what somebody else may be going through. So I think it's heartfelt. I think it comes from an honest place. But on the other hand, I've actually been able to challenge that, you know, and I try and be very careful when I say to somebody, you know, and we reach out to each other.
You're questioning their being. Yeah. Your intent. Yeah, right.
By saying, look, I know when somebody says to me, if you ever need anything, I'm there. I know they say that. And I also know how I'm just not going to take them up on that. But I want you to know.
Yeah.
I want you to know, in all sincerity, I get this. I've been there. I still end up there sometimes. I have your back if you'll have mine. And please hold me to account. If you're ever feeling, you know, dark and lost, I want you to reach out to me. I will be there for you. I get it. And if you can really, you know, put it in those terms that I understand, as opposed to call anytime. It's that long distant cousin of yours who's, well, if you're ever in the neighborhood, pop in, and then you do. And,
I'm here.
And they're like, oh God, the house is a mess, and we have no food for you. Yeah. They really didn't want to. It's well intentioned, and they don't mean any disrespect when they say it. It's the polite thing to say, but be careful of the language you use, and just make sure that if you're extending that to somebody, that you really, really mean it. Look, I understand that you're going through a tough time. I want to be there for you anytime, morning, noon, and night. I promise you, I will be at the other end of that phone. My house may be a mess. It may be a disaster. You're always welcome here anyway.
And most importantly, be careful of the language you use when you're talking to yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You're
inclined to believe the language coming out of your own head, and it's not always, like you said, you know, you went to a hardware store and looked at a rope. I found myself in the parking lot of a Canadian Tire several years ago wanting to go in and buy a hose.
Yeah.
And the only thing that stopped me was I was embarrassed. I had left the house in my PJs. I didn't want to be seen. I wanted to buy a hose and end it all, but I couldn't. I wouldn't be caught dead in my pajamas, for lack of a better word. Right?
Just visualizing it, and I'm sure it wasn't a pretty sight. And not a very pretty moment for you, I'm sure. Now, what would you suggest, what would you recommend if someone was going through something similar, like you were going through?
Please know that that's your brain playing a trick on you, and call your local distress center, call your local helpline. Call that person, hold them to account. Call that person who said that they'd be there for you and say, I just had this thought and I need your help.
Sure. Well, I'm going to give you another round of applause because you're doing it. You're out there and you're making people aware of something that a lot of people just don't want to talk about. And yes, we have things that we can be depressed about, but we have many more things we can feel good about. And all we have to do is find and embrace those good things, as well as taking people up on their offer of helping you, much like we do here at Club ADHD, and you're doing that. So I want to, if I were wearing a hat, I'd take it off for you.
My appreciation for that. And yeah, I have an expression that I always close off any time I do a public speaking engagement. My name is John Milkey. I have depression. I refuse to be depressed about it.
Well, that's another good one for the archives. Thank you once again to John Milkey for sharing his story, and he continues to do that. If you'd like to follow him, I'm sure he'd love to have you follow him. He's on Facebook. Milkey Show is what you have to type in. That's M-I-L-K-Y to connect with John on Facebook, to connect with him on Twitter, type at Milkey Show. Same deal on Instagram, Milkey Show. He's doing some good work there, so hats off to John, and who knows, maybe as a result of our interview, we might have made Club ADHD history, podcast history. Maybe we might have made a diagnosis, perhaps. Maybe I did that. Maybe. How do you feel? Do you tend to agree that there might be a diagnosis in there somewhere? Let me know. Just visit clubadhd.ca and hit the mailbox link, and that will connect you to my email address. As well, we have links to the Facebook page and the Twitter account. Love to hear from you. And what else? Oh, yeah, before I go, I want to mention, of course, Club ADHD, presented by the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. I'm doing this in September of 2019, so when I say next month, I mean October 2019. That is the month that contains the big conference. After all, October is ADHD Awareness Month throughout North America, maybe throughout the world. But every October, the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, they have their conference. It's a weekend full of information and bonding. And it's a good time and an informative time. For more information, visit their website. That's CADDAC, CADAC.ca. Okay, I think we have all the housework taken care of, I believe. I think so. Only one thing left to do, to remind you that I'm your cordial ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc, urging you to, whenever you can, wherever you can, say it loud, say it proud. ADHD is real. Bye for now.